Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for June 20th, Father's Day. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
And welcome, Catherine.
Happy Father's Day, everybody.
Thank you. We've got a lot of topics on the docket, if you will. We're going to talk about the oil spill, look at ads from across the South. And just talk about a host of other things that have happened. But I tell you what I wanted to lead off with, because I remember when I saw it earlier in the week, it was just something I had to watch again. And that was this video of North Carolina Congressman Bob Etheridge just going ballistic on this guy on the sidewalk. Tim and Catherine, you saw that. What'd you think of it? Catherine?
Let Tim go first.
Okay, Tim?
Well, The bottom line is a safe house seat is now competitive. A new poll come out, he's a point down. Even though it was a Republican commission poll, I believe Survey USA actually did the poll for this Civitas group or whatever their name is. It's very regrettable that he did it. I'm sure if he could call it back, he wouldn't have done it. I assume these two were, you know, both parties hired these college kids and stuff, trackers they call them, to just go around and follow these people, hoping to get something like that, like Allen had his macaca moment, you know, and apparently Etheridge has now had his, and it's very unfortunate because he's a good man.
Yeah, I tell you one thing I want to know. Do y'all think there's any way that he could sell this into, you know, like kind of a macho thing? Like, because, I mean, he came off like he was going to beat the crap out of that kid on that sidewalk. And, like, he came off as a badass. I mean, is there a chance they could sell that and to maybe getting some Republican-leaning men to say, hey, I was thinking about voting against Etheridge, but now I like him. You know, is there a chance they could pull that – you know, do that little twist move, Catherine. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think we expect a certain level of
decorum.
Decorum, exactly, from our congressman, and especially because it was a college kid, you know, a kid. I think that's going to be a hard spin. I'm not saying they won't try, but...
Yeah, but the only thing is a college kid is an adult. I mean, a college kid is 19, 20 years old. Etheridge, what, in his late 50s, maybe 60s?
Oh, no,
I mean, really, you would think... Yeah, you would think that a virile young 19-year-old could beat up your average 60-plus congressman. But in this case, my money would have been on Etheridge.
No, number one, he didn't want to beat him up. He wanted Congressman Etheridge to do exactly what
he
did. That's why both of them had cameras. And secondly, your idea for the macho man thing probably won't work now because he's already been blubbering out an apology and saying he wishes he could find the kid so he could apologize to him in person, this and that and the other. And he's not going to find them because they were Republican plants. So, you know, they did their job. I got to hand it to them. And now he's in some trouble against nominal competition, I might add. He's running against a nurse who had like $5,000 in her campaign account. And she'll probably now be sent money from all over the country.
And honestly, him having a female opponent probably makes that strategy a little trickier. But I guess I just watched too much pro wrestling because, you know, that would make a great pro wrestling vignette. You know, but that's big this year. I mean, that's probably the biggest pro wrestling year since '98 with Ventura, now with the head of WWE running for Senate in Connecticut. So, you know, that's just where my mind went on that one. But I don't know. He definitely was a very safe congressman. But now he will have to put up with the fact that, you know, cash is going to flow in against him. He's going to have to work, and have to worry about this. But it was just so out of nowhere. It wasn't even, and it seemed like, you know, it was just like, who are you? Like, he had no idea who they were. He just knew they were annoying him. And so I guess he was just having a bad day because he seemed to get pretty irate pretty quick over not much. I mean, I think I've seen worse where people get provoked over far more.
Well, maybe they've been
for
a while.
That
you
could
know,
be.
Guys, we're in a different age now. We're in the internet age. Something like that gets up on the internet. The video goes viral. Next thing you know, all the major news outlets are picking it up. And something like that blows up on you. That I'm sure he was liking about it after it was over, telling his staff about it, saying, I put them people in their place, blah, blah, blah. He never expected that, you know. But it happens now. It does. These guys have got to be careful.
Yeah, luckily for him, though, that he wasn't in a runoff of any kind. He's already got his nomination because he would have faced the voters right when it was white hot on Tuesday
right.
in North Carolina.
Right.
But let's kind of – we're going to come back to that Senate race, though, when we talk about our TV ads a little later. But let's move over to – that's on the Atlantic coast. Let's move over to the Gulf. And obviously the number one American political story, no matter where you're at, is the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, it seems to be, of interest to voters from left to right, in the middle, just something that people see as a – you know, American interest story, if you will, if nothing else, not even getting too deep into the politics. But we can look at it as a national issue, but then from there, I think we'll have to look at each state. Just starting off, Catherine, what do you think the political landscape of this thing is right now?
Well, I was really hoping that we as a country could try to work this through without making it a big political issue, but I was wrong. It's obviously becoming a huge political issue, and this past week Tom Price, sort of apologizing to BP and calling the $20 billion escrow account a shakedown, and then the next day, Barker doing the same thing. I think they're trying to make hay from the suffering of the people in the Gulf, as well as trying to make Obama look bad. I think it's really interesting that, you know, one day he isn't doing enough and he's a wimp, and the next day it's a shakedown. You know, that he can't win for losing, uh-huh. President Obama. But I also, the one thing I think is interesting is that, you know, this $20 billion that they've put aside in escrow, is everybody if you read all the press releases and all the news from the White House and news from everybody, including the BP website and their press release, they understand that it's just the beginning. But everybody, like the news and the commentators, are all spinning it like it's going to be capped at $20 billion. So I think it's really interesting the way that is morphing. It's kind of, you know, people are saying, oh, they're getting away easy with only $20 billion. Well, they know that it's going to be more like $100 billion ultimately. So I found that kind of an interesting meme over the week. I actually posted on Blog for Democracy that, no, that's not the cap.
Yeah, Tim, your thoughts real quick.
Catherine said it pretty well, but politically it's been killing the administration, of course. A poll taken of Louisiana voters says that Bush handled Katrina better than Obama has handled the spill, if you can believe that. And, of course, the administration's been tied up with this thing all summer when, you know, they could have been concentrating on some other things. It's hurt us as a party, and, you know, politically speaking.
Yeah, and now we're going to talk about the state by state. I don't think the average American would probably agree with that statement. It's kind of interesting snapshot from Louisiana. But, you know, it's kind of like I think a lot of voters are probably seeing that, you know, this impacts them. A lot of probably red state voters that, you know, don't really, you know, get into environmental causes. I mean, you know, you think about the Gulf Coast and Panama City and Destin and Gulf Shores, those kind of places. Those are very red state vacation locales. You know what I mean? Like folks that are, you know, more Republican-leaning are much more likely to go to states like that to go on vacation. And, you know, their vacation's being ruined, and that may make them more likely in the long run to see this as more of a political, you know, environmental issue they'd be more interested in. What's y'all's thoughts on that?
Well, I think you really could have made a case for the environmental thing. I think that might have been one of the front and center things to talk about. Instead, I think the Republicans found their out with the six-month moratorium on deep water drilling because they can then parlay this into a jobs thing. Oh, there's 70,000 jobs right here in the Gulf. He's just making it worse than it was. Blah, 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 blah. They seem to be winning the war of words on everything that comes up, don't they? Or am I imagining that?
I kind of think sometimes so. You may be so into that hedgehog report that they may be
It's not that at all. I mean, I can, you know, it just looks to me like the administration is constantly backpedaling on their heels here.
Yeah, see, I think that was true up until about Thursday, but I think those comments from Barker, is it Barker, is that his name?
Joe Barton.
I think him. And then when we learned later, I mean, it was interesting that Tom Price made his remarks earlier, but they didn't really come out into the light until later. And then I don't know if you noticed the response from the GOP caucus, their congressional caucus. They, you know, demanded that Barton apologize. But in their statement, they referred to the oil spill as the largest natural disaster in the history of the country. Well, it is not a natural disaster.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
It was not a natural disaster, and I think, and you know, that kind of went unseen for a few hours. I was kind of following it on Twitter, and then all of a sudden, everybody was like, "Wait a second, it's not a natural disaster, and how dare you refer to it that way?"
So
I think they may be trying to spin it that way to have some like. To keep their, you know, close ties with BP and the oil companies and other corporate leaders. But I think that people are calling them on it.
You know, David, you did touch on something very interesting that I wonder if people have noticed. But from the affected area here, from the panhandle of Florida over to the Texas border, buddy, that is some red territory there. And it interests me that these people who have been screaming, get the government off our backs, let's go to tea parties, this and that and the other, all of a sudden they're screaming, well, where is the federal government? We can't do this. The federal government has to do it. I just find that a little ironic.
Yeah, and I think another tricky thing is the fact that it's a British company. A lot of those kind of isolationist factions may be more likely to then support American, you know, government over a British company. So I think that does figure in if it were, you know, Chevron or Exxon instead of BP, then, you know, that might play a little bit different in the impact. But since it's, you know, BP in the name, that may change it up to where, hey, these British, you know, businessmen are taking advantage of just, you know, good old boys that, you know, crab and fish and whatever else off the coast, because that's really who it is hurting the most. I mean, their whole livelihood's ruined now and ruined for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure those businesses are lost, particularly in Louisiana. I think that's the state that's going to continue to be the hardest hit because their area is not so much tourism is not what they get off the Gulf. It's actually industry. The tourism, I'm sure they can clean it up quicker to where you can get your tourism back, you know, by winter or by next summer. But then the actually, you know, living species that you have to live off of, that's going to come a lot slower.
A lot slower.
Economically, for every dollar oil brings into that region, tourism and fishing brings in three. Hey, let's do the math. What has gotten killed here, and who is at fault? You know?
Yeah. So, you know, I guess going state by state, now Texas, that's the furthest one over. I have not heard as much about Texas being impacted, their coast, as some of the other states. Have y'all heard as much about Texas?
I haven't heard much about Texas at all.
So I'm kind of guessing that Texas would have the least political impact. It's a very conservative state. This isn't likely to move anybody further left. If somebody just wanted to, you know, blame the president, they're going to keep blaming the president in that state.
Well, David, two things I want to ask you then. Joe Barton, of course, is from Texas, and Texas is a big oil state. So how will Barton's statements and the fact that Texas is an oil state impact, say, the governor's race there this year?
You know, it'd be interesting. If anything changes, I guess you could say it's because of that, because right now Perry's, I guess, doing much better than expected.
Well, he's got an 8-point lead. New poll, he's up by 8.
And that's a little down from what it was. I don't know that the reason was, you know, the oil spill. It may have been that people realized that this was the guy a bunch of them didn't like, 4 months ago. So why would they start liking him now?
What about Barton's statement, David? What would it do?
And now his district's not a Gulf district, is it?
It is not, but Texas is a big oil state. So, you know, reverberations from that statement are going all over that state.
So they're probably more likely to be, okay with big oil, if you will. I don't think they're going to be as reactionary, if you will, and make a change. I don't see that, you know, Texas being a big impact state. Now, moving over to Louisiana, this is the one where it could be a little trickier than the others. I mean, this is a state that's trending more conservative. But, you know, they have a U.S. Senate race. The congressional representative from the district most hardly hurt is the Democratic nominee, and he's seen as somebody that's, you know, really taken a lot of action here, Charlie Molossaw. Like, if you saw the picture, there was the president, and about two seats over was Charlie Molossaw. Charlie Crist was also in the picture, a few other guys I didn't recognize right on site. But you can tell Charlie, you know, Molossaw's a player in this. And you would have to think it would raise his profile and help him.
I think it's going to help him. He was brought to tears about the whole thing on TV, and he seems to be very engaged. And you know, he's been cruising his district trying to, you know, work with people and explain what's going on. So I think it's probably gives him some more visibility. And
yeah, and he's one that might could then refute that. Finding that poll showed him. He may say, look, because he was a big player in Katrina too, because it was once again one of the two hardest hit congressional districts. He might could say, look, I was here for Katrina. I was here for the Gulf oil spill. I know how both were handled and work it from there. So I think, you know, and he's, I guess, you know, probably getting a lot more attention. That could help his fundraising. I mean, it's hard. It's kind of bad to think about it in those terms, but. Politics just deals in reality. There's nothing to do about that.
And he's also, and he doesn't want them to ban the offshore drilling either.
No, because I'm sure he gets a lot of interest from that. I mean, that does provide jobs. I mean, obviously the bigger solution is moving to something different to where you can then wean off of offshore drilling, in a pattern pace. Now, the next person. Now, Bobby Jindal, he's been, I mean, I won't say his plan is right, but I will say he's been proactive, active, whatever you may say. He has tried to somehow put buffers up to stop the oil, and the federal government said you couldn't, but, he's trying to take a lot of action, if you will. Maybe a much doing about nothing, but it's been action nonetheless Tim, what's your thoughts on Bobby Jindal?
Oh, yeah, very proactive, David, from the beginning. He's been out there screaming. He jumped in those airboats. He's been riding around with that light vest on, bright orange, I might notice, so he can be picked out in a crowd, sticking his hand in that oil, saying, look at this. Somebody get out here and do some blah, 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 blah. Brilliantly done. As badly
as he did
in that speech, just raised his profile here.
Well, but, you know, he's the one, he's one of the ones who's like, you know, you know, he's all for small government until he needs it. You know, smaller government, oh, don't help me, help me, don't help me, help me. You know, it's like, I grow impatient with him.
I think what he knew, though, Catherine, is how the voters perceived the actions of the previous governor during Katrina,
right,
when she was viewed as someone who just sat there like a bump on a log up in Baton Rouge and did nothing. And this guy decided immediately, you know what, I'm not going to be seen this way, and off he went. And, you know, I got to give the devil his due. I got to hand it to him. This has been well done on his part.
Oh, I agree
politically
with you, but it's a little, when you delve a little deeper, it's a little fake.
Well, I agree with you on that, but I think his voters are seeing, you know, the political side of it, and that's very advantageous to him right now.
Yeah, I think he may come out as the winner in this whole thing, the way he's, you know, handled it, you know, being so proactive, coming up with, you know, his solution, which I have no idea the environmental or how sound it would be to try to, you know, buffer their coast somehow. I have a feeling oil's just going to find a way. If we're that easy, BP would have already done it. But I do think he's a cool winner. Now, Mississippi, now that's a state where their coast is more commercial. The casinos, actually, are there, so I guess not as many people come exclusively for the beaches. Haley Barber's the governor. I hadn't really heard a lot of the senators doing much. Gene Taylor is a Democratic representative that represents that area. Any real impact on Mississippi's politics, y'all think, the Gulf Oil spill?
Governor Barber, I've noticed, has kind of played this thing in the middle, hasn't he? I mean, he has been saying, you know, our coasts are still great. Come on down here and see us. We need the tourism dollars, blah, 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 blah. And at the same time saying, well, you know, I'm not going to personally criticize the president because I've been through this thing before. And I understand how difficult something like this can be. It's almost as if he's trying to sound presidential, or am I imagining that?
Oh.
Well, the GOP landscape, that won't get you anywhere. Playing nice with the current president of the United States will not score you any points in the GOP, so he better, you know, sell that one down the river. It's a tactic. It might be good government, but it ain't good politics for him.
I wonder.
But, okay, how many sound-thinking people are really voting in these primaries, Tim, in these Republican primaries? I mean, we'll get to some of these ads later, but, I mean, it seems like it's who can out-crazy the next one going right to who wins the election. But, you know, I don't see this one being a big impact. Plus, Mississippi barely has any elections up this time, I think, other than the congressional races. And I don't think there's any real hot ones. There may be the northern end of the district, but I somehow think Travis Childers is safe. There's really not a lot of competitive races, and their state races don't come up until the 2011. So probably not a little impact there. Now, Alabama, they've got a lot at stake this year. You know, open governor races, open races, you know, up and down the ballot on not every race, but a lot of them. AG's race is now open. Their, you know, current AG lost in the Republican primary because that kind of figures in for, you know, suing BP and all. I think this will come up in Alabama. I don't know how big a role it'll play, but I do think it'll certainly be a campaign ad. And I think it could help Ron Sparks in that he's the current agriculture commissioner, which agriculture, they regulate your gas pumps, which is not exactly offshore drilling and, you know, off Louisiana coast, but still it seems kind of, you know, natural resource related, and Ron Sparks has experiences there. Captain, what do you think?
I think it gives him an opportunity to talk about, you know, to as the current agricultural commissioner, just an opportunity. It's an opportunity for him to speak with knowledge about the impact of the oil spill on. I mean, I think it, if he plays it right, it's an opportunity that he can use.
Yeah, Tim, your thoughts on Alabama?
Well, this is easy. What Catherine just said. she hit the nail on the head with Ron Sparks right there.
Yeah, this has happened twice. Well, I'll go ahead and let Tim know he'll get Florida first. Now, talking about tourism, Florida is the state where, you know, tourism is just, I mean, there's no state like it that tourism dollars fund their economy. And Florida's hurting as much as anywhere. I think their population losses have been as drastic as anywhere. Now, they have a governor's race, and, of course, that's been fluid, where the lead Republican nominee has changed. Then they have a U.S. Senate race, and they have three candidates. The current governor, who will be seen as a player in this, was at the table with President Obama, the big, you know, I guess rectangle table, the way they had it set up the other day. I guess we'll talk about Senate race first. Tim, how does this affect the Senate race?
Well, you know, Governor Chris has really had his profile raised during this. He's been able to be front and center because he's the sitting governor. And it seems to have blown his competition off the pages a little bit. Brand new poll out of Florida, he's up by 11.
Really?
Some Republicans are really starting to get nervous about this, and the only thing I can figure out is why he suddenly jumped out to an 11-point lead is because my brother-in-law was just here, and he lives in Panama City, and he said every time he turned the TV on, there's Governor Crist on television talking about this thing, and nobody can say anything because he's the governor. So, he's getting all this free airtime, and he's just vacuuming up all the air in the room, sucking up all the air in the room, and that's got to be what's blown him out to this big lead. So, politically, this has really, really helped him.
Yeah. Well, let me then to go to the governor's. Well, first, Catherine, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I agree with that, but, you know, he's also done some, been outspoken about some other more moderate issues, like aside from the oil spill, about abortion and about LGBT issues. So he's probably getting some of the, you know, more moderate Republicans and some independents who may have, for whom those may be important issues. So I think he's playing this very well. You know,
yeah,
I like Charlie Crist. I do. I like him.
Yeah, although,
I
mean, honestly, other than those voters that care, you know, really deeply about those issues, I mean, the average Floridian is much more concerned, I'm sure, about the Gulf oil spill and how
right,
that impacts their life.
But it all combines. I suspect it all combines to give him a lead like that.
Yeah, I guess it seemed more as a moderate, if you will, although, you know, the Republicans are painting him as a moderate every chance they get, either to their health
working.
Or their demise, I suspect, to their demise. Now, talking about the governor's race, now this one gets tricky in that, you know, who was the favorite to be the Republican nominee, at least, and probably, if you believe the polls, the favorite to win governor, was their sitting Attorney General, Bill McCollum. Now, he was in a tricky spot. The Attorney General, you know, we got a guy run for Attorney General that's going to, you know, sue if it hits Georgia's coast, which I kind of, you know, mocked last week. Well, obviously, I mean, you have a case if you're Florida. It is going to affect your tourism business. Does this guy then, Bill McCollum, does he go and say, I'm going to make BP pay? And if he does, that would probably help him with the middle-of-the-road Floridian, but in the primary, would that hurt him among these conservative voters? Catherine?
I don't think that would hurt him. I think people are mad at BP, and I think everybody is, and I don't think that hurts him. I mean, it has to be.
Joe Clark and Rand Paul aren't. You know, Tom Price isn't. I'm sure Rush Limbaugh isn't. You know, and that's who they all get their playbook from. If Rush Limbaugh isn't mad at BP, that means probably 70% of Republicans aren't mad at BP,
right? Yeah.
I mean, they're all programmed. They get their programming from, you know, 12 to 3 daily, 5 days a week. I don't listen to Rush Limbaugh, but I guess we could look on his site real quick and see what he's saying. And I have a feeling he, you know, BP's advertised for him. He's probably singing their praises.
Dave,
Tim, what do you think?
This is Florida. The typical Republican voter in Florida, I think, statewide now, aren't they just a little bit different of an animal from, say, the typical Republican voter, even in Georgia? They're more senior, a little bit more moderate, I think. I don't think they're the hardcore right-winger type. So I think Republicans in Florida have to toe a little bit of a different line. Do you see what I'm saying here? That they're not as hardcore right-wing as, you know, some Republicans would be right here in Georgia and South Carolina, Alabama, those other states. Florida is
probably
just
do have
a little bit different.
You have a lot of conservative retirees, I bet, down there. People that have, you know, a little bit of money, and they go down there to try to avoid income tax and all that type of stuff. So I think they end up being
conservative
as well.
Yeah.
But now, here, okay, I looked on RushLimbaugh.com. Organized crime in the White House, the regime shakedown of BP. Then they have another Stalinist show trial talking about Harry Waxman conducting an inquisition on the BP spiel. So therefore, he's obviously defending BP. That means now the rank-and-file Republican is going to defend BP. There you have it. I mean, you know, the man has spoken. He's made his decision. It didn't come any surprise to me. So that's what the average Republican is going to think. And so if the Attorney General McCall goes after BP, he may get hurt more in the primary, and he has no margin of error, so he's going to have to go hard right. And if he fails to go after BP, then does that hurt him in the general and help Alex Sink?
Let's just wait a second, though. You know, people can listen to Rush Limbaugh and all that, but if their livelihood is affected by these things and they think that BP is not being as responsible as they should be, they will strike out against that meme. They will. We know people vote on their pocketbook. They always do. I mean, how many times do we try to convince them otherwise, and they always do. So if they're seeing, you know, if they're like small business owners who have restaurants or, you know, some are tied into the tourism industry, they're gonna be looking for someone to blame for their loss of business. And they're going to blame
Catherine, at first I thought you were going to say, these people can listen to Rush Limbaugh and think for themselves. And I thought, oh, my goodness, Catherine, that's
well,
an oxymoron. But
I'm
you didn't
not
go
saying,
there.
I'm not saying that they will necessarily think for themselves, but they might shun what Rush says if their pocketbooks are affected by this, which they probably will be. Whether their business is tied directly to the tourism industry or indirectly, because it's going to hurt everybody. I mean, I see what you're saying. I think there's a lot of ditto heads out there who listen to what Rush says, but I also think people vote based on the economics of things, and the economics of this is that they're going to get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously people, I mean, that if you owned a surf shop or you owned some business directly related to tourism, you think that would, that would matter. But, I mean, how many – obviously some of the folks that seem to run a lot of the tourism-related business might be a little more moderate to liberal as well. It just varies. I mean, I know when I was in Florida a few years ago, I did see a sign on a thing that always stuck with me. It said, "We always must love President Bush more than those who hate him to keep him strong," or something. I thought, oh, my goodness, that is so over the top. It was one of these, you know, tourist towns in Florida, Fort St. Joe. And, you know, so I know they've got their conservatives, too. So I just think it's going to be the same dynamic where you have to run as far to the right as you can to win the nomination. So we will see. I mean, this thing's going to unfold, and I think it's going to be an issue the rest of the summer, you know, probably into Labor Day, and probably going to be some effects of it all the way up to Election Day, until it gets better or other issues push it off the front page, and it'll take a pretty big one. Well, I guess now kind of let's move to our ads, and we've got a good number of them, but I want to start in Alabama because of they have a runoff on the Republican side, and Martha Roby, a Montgomery City Councilman, is facing a teabagger, Rick Barber. And Rick Barber's ad kind of made national, you know, news, if you will, really more like blogosphere news nationally. That's where I first saw it linked. This ad has him at a table, and he's supposed to be talking to patriots of the 1770s, talking about how he, you know, they should overthrow the government now because it's so much worse now than it was back then. Tim, what did you think of this ad?
Oh, man. Oh, I have a headache. Typical red meat kind of, you know, this is more raw meat kind of thing, isn't it? It's so over the top. It's incredible that this guy pretends he's sitting there with a couple of our founding fathers and you know, there's the picture of a musket sitting on the table, and every time you turn it around, this character saying he's a proud ex-Marine and this and that and the other, you know, it's just a very inflammatory anti-government thing, and he apparently is, I don't think he's trying to reach a typical type of voter with it. I think this guy really believes this stuff, and I think you can look in his eyes and see it. What scares me is that, you know, some people like that might get elected some more this year.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think this is the kind of thing that can get used against him in the general, but, man, it's going to help him in the primary. Catherine, your thoughts on that ad?
Well, I think it's funny that the two guys running in that, isn't that the one where they're both, like, trying to out-conservative each other?
Well, I mean, he's trying to get the female candidate, and her ad is this, her ad really says the same thing in this very milquetoast way about a door, you know, it's all those bad Democrats doing us wrong, but it's so much more pedestrian compared.
Mm-hmm.
Sane, too.
I have to, you know, agree with Tim. It's just like, you know, raw meat that will probably help him a lot in the primary, but I don't know what it'll do in the general.
Yeah, Bobby Bright's pretty strong, and so if you go too, you know, far out there, you're going to make what's seen as a very competitive seat more safe democratically, because Bobby Bright's is a conservative Democrat who was the mayor of Montgomery, the largest city in the district. You know, that district probably hadn't changed a lot politically in the last 2 years. And incumbency's probably not going to be bad for Bobby Bright. It's probably going to help him pick up some more votes he didn't get last time. He may lose some in that folks don't come out in a non-presidential year, but a lot of folks are going to come out for a fairly competitive governor's race. So turnout's not going to be as likely to hurt him as it will in other places. But you know, this ad, I mean, the biggest thing I just wanted to scream at the computer was the whole deal was taxation without representation. The reason they didn't like the taxes was because they had no say in it. We have say in our tax system. Now, you may be in the minority, but that's how majority-minority works. I don't always like how the results turn out in an election, but you have to live with it. That's what a democracy is about.
They don't like that, though.
I actually like Roby's ad. David, just if I'm a hack looking at the ad, a political hack looking at the ad, she gave the two power words that makes every Republican's mouth just water with anticipation of voting, Nancy Pelosi. Is that great?
Words. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, blame everything on Nancy Pelosi. I mean, I
Republican voters eat that stuff up, though. They eat it up. It's very well done. Certainly better than his. His bordered on silly, didn't it?
Yeah, it was over the filter. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you would pay attention to it. It's the kind of thing when you're fast forwarding your DVR, you might go, "What is that again?" You know, because I don't know if y'all use DVRs, but I mean, I don't watch commercials anymore unless something really catches my eye. I mean, you have to be the most interesting man in the world kind of commercial for me to watch you anymore.
Well, you know what? I hope she beats him. I'm not above endorsing one Republican over another. Man, I hope she beats him.
Yeah, and it would be interesting. It would be a Montgomery City Councilwoman versus the former Montgomery Mayor. So they served together. I don't know if that was a good or bad relationship and how that will affect the race. I mean, you know, Barbara won't, you know, probably pull any punches given his style so far. Well, let's kind of move over. North Carolina, I feel we have to talk about North Carolina in that the U.S. Senate runoff this Tuesday, Elaine Marshall and Cal Cunningham. Elaine Marshall only had apparently one ad, and it's the one she released a while back. The production values, I thought, were not very good. It had the moving people. Tim, what were your thoughts on Elaine Marshall ad?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't think that ad was particularly effective, but you know, some things have been happening outside of the ad wars, apparently, with endorsements and stuff that have really, really been helping her. So I don't think good or bad ads really are going to affect that race. And I don't think either one of them had a lot of money for advertising, did they?
No, and that's probably North Carolina is a pretty expensive southern state. You have a lot of equal-sized media markets. You have a big Charlotte, then you have Raleigh, and, my goodness, Greenville, and Asheville, Greensboro, Winston-Salem. You've got all these cities you have to advertise in, making it more expensive. It's not, you know, like one big city is going to get you, you know, two-thirds of the state like Georgia. Now, you're talking about the endorsement, the MoveOn.com or MoveOn.org endorsement. Catherine, do you think that's going to be a big impact in that race?
If they put money in it. I mean, it didn't help them with Halter, but, you know.
Yeah, and there was money in that race. I mean, I think that – and that was probably – I just don't see how anybody gets too ginned up about this race because I don't think either candidate's this big, you know, moderate or liberal boogeyman, whichever you want to look at it. I think they're probably not that politically different. Their backgrounds, I guess, a little different. And then Cal Cunningham's ad. Tim, your thoughts on that one?
I didn't see it. Didn't see that.
Yeah, it was kind of this character piece with this young man, and it was a nice little story. It was almost like these Wednesday Child ads. I don't see it piercing the filter. Also, don't see how it connects to Cal Cunningham that well. So that's going to be a stretch. So obviously I think the North Carolina Senate race is not going to be one where you say, hey, that was won or lost on television advertising. Moving, I guess, back to our home state and the governor's race, we've had three of the four candidates have released ads, and DeBose Porter has put an ad out. Please, you know, somebody let me know.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen one.
Yeah, so I guess that we can talk about the people we know of. Thurbert Baker, his was the latest, and it was a bio piece, and it was timed with Father's Day, which if you put the timing with the content of the ad, that was nice. Catherine, what did you think overall in the ad?
I didn't think it was very effective.
Yeah, I tend to think about one thing. Drew Weston says a lot of people vote on personality and character of somebody. You know, do they, the likability, they like this person. And that ad did, you know, play to Thurbert Baker's likability.
Well,
you
that's
know,
true with his daughters and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I mean, gosh, are we expecting too much for our governor to be a decent father or a good father? We kind of hope so. I guess that's kind of like, we were talking about our Alvin Green discussion before the air. But, I mean, it's kind of like you kind of expect him to be a decent father, but it was certainly a nice little story. And the fact that his daughter was a teacher, I guess that might send a covert or, you know, kind of a little
not directly put out point that, hey, Thurbert Baker has a direct line to understand education through his daughter. Kim, your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was a pretty generic thing. Actually, I've seen this same ad kind of replayed in 1,000 races over the last X number of years. So I'm kind of with Catherine here, David. That ad didn't grab me. Didn't do much for me. I mean, we want to go into a race assuming that every candidate, even though that turns out not to be true, but we want to assume from the get-go that every candidate is a good family man and is done right by their family, and we don't need to be reminded of that in an ad. He needed a breakout ad, I think, and this wasn't it.
Yeah, why didn't he talk about bingo?
Yeah, like that.
I mean,
yeah, we'll have to get to bingo. I don't really know the difference between bingo and keno as far as the whole proposals. But, yeah, you're right. It's an issue-based ad. Maybe it's a two-ad strategy. We don't know how much money he has to put in it. I don't know where he's going to run these ads. I mean, like, for instance, as I was watching a little bit of TV before the show, I noticed the Roy Barnes ad. Roy Barnes' latest ad has related, I guess it's called Work because it has the whole texting thing pulled in. But it has a lady getting foreclosed on her house and having to move, and he talks about the foreclosure issue. Looking at that ad, Tim, what's your thoughts?
Okay, well, let me just make a general comment on all the ads of his that I've seen so far. I think that a very good job has been done on these ads. They seem to have come with a plan. There was the introductory ad where he was sitting there talking, you know, the one that a lot of people have dubbed the apology ad. He moves from that into ads about different pressing issues of the day. The following ads are all about addressing these problems and how he will fix them as governor. Now, there's no way, of course, he can do all of this stuff he's promising, but the ads are effective. And most importantly, he's blanketing TV with them, David. I'm seeing them everywhere. There are a lot of them. I mean, he is just swamping his opponents. You seeing that, Catherine?
Well, I'm like David. I don't really watch a lot of commercials on TV.
Yeah, I mean, but I just happened to catch this one on wrestling. I mean, I was like, all places. He was.
Oh, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. They're on news shows. They're on sports shows. They're everywhere. It's amazing.
Well, that's what, you know, having a lot of money.
Yeah.
And having a close tie to someone in the ad buying business.
Well, I mean, Roy Barnes has been accused before of his get out the vote strategy is go on TV, GOTV. So, they do fit a theme, and it does show him. And I do think Roy Barnes' strongest appeal or his strongest narrative would be, I'm a doer. I accomplish things. You might always agree with me, but I get things done. And like when he spoke in Chattooga County, I mean, that was kind of the theme. He accomplishes things.
Right.
If he can sell that theme, that's a good narrative for him. And then I guess the last of the three Georgia ads will be David Poitras has had an ad that he's had a while. Well done, good production values, but I don't think there's been a lot of points put behind it. I think you see it on Georgia Gang every other week. But it has that one big line. I think y'all have actually talked to General Poitras 1 week when I went on the show about him not taking – a paycheck until Georgia's unemployment rate is under, and y'all have to tell me the percentage.
Under seven.
Seven, okay.
No, but I don't think I think if you found 10 voting Georgians, if more than two could tell you about that, I'd be absolutely floored. Wouldn't y'all?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They call it the mother's milk of politics for a reason. It would have been interesting to see what General Poitras could have done on television with some money. Because he is a compelling figure. He is a very compelling figure. He's very articulate, presents a good image. He has a good story. I thought, like you, David, this was a well-done ad, but, you know, I he's just not getting enough airtime, and that's just all there is to it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of last time, you know, it was Roy Barnes, Lewis Massey, David Poitherson, the fellow from LaGrange, Langford, and he finished third, I think, that time. And it's kind of like, that time he was kind of coming off being a labor commissioner directly, wasn't he? And so this one time he's been a little more out of the eye, although he's had the military job, being head of Georgia's, you know, armies, if you will, National Guard, whatever it may be. But, you know, it's just, I guess it's more of a lower profile thing, so it seems like it's even tougher this time. Maybe the competition's not quite as stiff in some way, but you think with a sitting attorney general.
Let's just be honest. When Roy Barnes jumped into this race late, it just changed the whole dynamic of it, obviously, right?
It did, absolutely.
Yeah, because he sucks up the money like nobody else can. Yeah. Well, I guess one of the races we're going to look at the ads from, and that was the South Carolina runoff. That, Catherine, I think it's the one you've been alluding to. They're trying to out-conservative each other.
Yeah.
Kim Scott, the African-American, who is really to the right of Strom Thurmond's boy. And, you know, in Tim Scott's ad, he's sitting on the stair, or he's sitting at the bottom of the stairwell in somebody's house and just telling these people who are absolutely enthralled at listening to Tim Scott talk. I can't think of anybody on earth I would be that interested in hearing talk as these people are. They're great actors. Catherine,
yeah,
what do you think of that ad?
I think that's it.
I mean, they were hanging on every word. But what do you think of that ad, Catherine?
Well, I just found them both to be, you know, I couldn't really get too involved in the content. It just seemed like I had to decide which one was more conservative.
Yeah. And then I think Paul Thurmond, he's in several, and most of his are kind of bio pieces. Is that correct, Tim?
Yeah, pretty much. As for Scott, I kind of think his ads are pretty effective. We're talking about one of the reddest of red southern states. He obviously is a unique character in an obviously unique race laced with history, you know, with Strom Thurmond and
all
that.
Exactly. That's
and
true.
This Scott guy's about to beat him, you know, and it's just, you know, he might just be something of a rising star over there. I'm going to keep my eye on that guy.
Yeah, I think that if the Republican people get it, you know, like this country's diversifying, we've got to diversify what we look like.
Yeah.
You know,
there
it would be good for their party. Now, of course, their core fundamentals are, you know, let's not look at race in any way. Let's look exclusively at the person. So, therefore, they might not
be thinking
like that.
That's what they say their values are. Let's just make that clear. That's
yeah, but you know what I'm saying. You know, they always like to talk about the completely colorblind society, the one that never looks at right, you know, that kind of thing. So, but of course, if that's how you're thinking, you would never think about, you know, looking at Tim Scott to diversify your party. You certainly wouldn't think of having Michael Steele as your party chair, but yet they did that. So, you know, but the ads I don't think will make the difference. It may just be that Scott's a little more dynamic.
What's going on. He is a very dynamic individual, and he's going to win that race. He's going to win.
Yeah. Now, I did see one ad from Thurmond where he hit Scott on pork spending, which apparently Scott's running deep against earmarks. So I guess he's trying to cut down Scott on his signature issue, but it may be that the people like him so much that they're just not going to want to believe that about him.
No.
Particularly those folks at the bottom of the stairwell. They aren't buying anything negative by Scott. I've never seen a crowd like that. Hopefully that crowd won't listen to the barber ad, or they will be taking up guns and storming the gates of the White House and Capitol building, because those folks can be easily led. Well, got all kind of little topics here and there. One I wanted to talk about was in Florida, actually two in Florida. One was the state representative candidate wrote a check one penny shy of what they needed to qualify. Y'all think there's a chance that somebody getting that check probably noticed that and could have said, hey, you got a penny in your pocket so, you know, you can have the full amount? Or do you think they were playing party politics and helping the incumbent out? Wait,
Catherine,
what happened?
You didn't. Okay, you didn't hear about it. This is in Florida. The qualifying fee was, and it's not in front of me, it was like $1,982.82. And this cat wrote it for $82.81. They came one penny short of writing their check for the full qualifying amount. Probably the qualifying fee is a percentage of the annual pay.
Right, they usually
are. Weird number. And so they basically disqualified them, saying you didn't pay the full fee to qualify, which technically they did not. I just have a funny feeling that somebody checking these checks, had they really wanted this person to qualify, they would have said, hey, you give us a penny real quick and you're good, or fix your check.
Well, they should have done it when they qualified.
But then the person taking the check from, you know, because they're probably registered by the Republican Party, this is the challenger who would have been a stiff challenger, apparently, not some gadfly. And the incumbent then had him removed off the ballot. I think the people at the party office were probably helping the incumbent out by not saying
ding, 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 you win the prize.
Yeah, but still, I mean, he didn't pay the full amount. I mean, the fact that he didn't pay the full amount.
Yeah, after qualifying, they held it until after qualifying. Then after qualifying, they said, oh, by the way, you're a penny short. Your check's disqualified. They could have said, if the guy registered on Tuesday and qualifying lasted until Friday, they could have said something to the guy for three straight days. They chose not to.
Yeah, right. And that's unfortunate. But, I mean, why didn't he know how much it was going to be, which it was supposed to be?
Well, you know what?
I think there's some faults on both sides. I think there's some faults.
Oh, no. I mean, it's definitely an error in his part. I mean, it shows a lack of judgment, but, I mean, we keep going back to that with, you know, people, don't we expect more of our elected officials, you know, not to sext people and this, that, and the other. You know, and so, obviously he holds some blame, but, I mean, it seems like, I'm sure this kind of thing's happened before and people have, you know, caught it and helped the people out, and in this case they didn't want to because they wanted to help the incumbent. The next issue in Florida, Marco Rubio has had his house foreclosed on. He shares this house with another Tallahassee or another lawmaker. It's the house is in Tallahassee, probably just something they bought so they could have a place to stay when they were serving in the legislature. And I guess he doesn't need this house, but I don't understand why he didn't pay his bills or sell the place. What do you know of it, Tim?
Well, I've been looking around. This story came out a few days ago, and it's been making the rounds on the net, I guess, more than it has in the major media markets. Now, Rubio has said a lot more than what this article said, of course. He claims it was just an oversight. He owns several houses. Apparently, this guy's worth a few bucks. And of all things, he's blaming this little blow-up on the media for reporting it, if you can believe that. Hey, when you're wrong, what does a good Republican do? Point the finger at the evil media, right, guys? So that's the tack that Rubio is taking with this. Hey, it was an oversight. I've taken care of it, and it's all the media's fault. So
It was an oversight for 5 months.
Yeah, I didn't pay my bill in the New York Times. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. I didn't pay my bills, but don't worry, folks. I'll handle those billions of dollars in Washington real well. Yeah, that ought to be a winning issue, right?
I mean, this guy, he looked as hot as could be 6 months ago, and he is cooling off. It's just something else how he has cooled off. But, I mean, you know, it's became a different dynamic for him. He could be a darling in this Republican primary, but now that he's got to win this thing against a Democrat and an independent to hit both to his left, you know, good government issues like this, especially for Republican voters that could then say, hey, I'm okay with Crist, this becomes more of an issue, if you will.
I know we've talked about this before, but I can't remember. Do you have to get 50% plus one in Florida?
I don't think you have to have the majority. I don't know if it's just plurality or if it's some states are 40, some states are 45.
In Florida, I think the guy with the most votes wins. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that's the way it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's rare for a southern state, but I guess that's why Florida's the least southern of the southern states, if you will. But yeah, I think pretty much our time has come to a close, but it's been a good show. We got a whole bunch of stuff we didn't get to, but that just leaves more topics for y'all next week.
Okay.
Okay, good night.
Thanks.
All right, because goodbye.